This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Hey everyone, it's Deese here to tell you about a brand new show coming Wednesday, November 3rd called Some Imperfections, the SIP podcast, Some Imperfections podcast, hosted by life coaches Abby Buckenberger, Sierra Cossey, and myself. We are coming together to bring you a brand new show. It's going to be every other Wednesday starting November 3rd. You can find it on Deese Comedy and IamAlliance.me. The show combines Abby and Sierra, who are certified life coaches, helping you every day, bringing you a fuller experience to your life, helping you with all your world's problems. And I will be sitting on the side doing my usual slang and dick jokes. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a great combination. We've solving all the world's problems. Everything you need to know. I have great advice, guys. I just don't listen to myself. That's my problem. But we're going to be combining all of our knowledge, their genuine skills, my practical, ridiculous knowledge of getting myself into horrible situations and figuring out how to get out of it. And we will be answering your questions. We've got, you can email us. You can find us on Instagram at some.imperfections, on Facebook at some.imperfections. And you can message us, find us on Waze, Yelp, Yellow Pages, White Pages, any of the pages. Look us up, find us, send us your questions, your topics, things you want to talk about. We'll answer them anonymously if you want. Just let us know. We'll have links and all the upcoming information for you to let us know what you want us to talk about. So check that out, guys, tomorrow on Deese Comedy, The Social Hour, everywhere you find podcasts, and also at IamAlliance.me. And again, that is every other Wednesday from The Social Hour and I Am Alliance.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I'm not a chicken, but if you give me an egg, I will sit on it.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, the co-owner of Little Monsters Pictures, producer Jen Bertling, and now your host. Little Monster is his mom's nickname for him. Just kidding, his mom doesn't talk to him. Deese Casillas!
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for coming around for another episode. We appreciate you hanging out. We have a great episode planned for you. More on that in just a second. Before we get into it with our guest today, as usual, guys, go to Deese Comedy/calendar. Check out all the events and things coming up. There are some live events crawling back. Despite everything going on in the country right now. And go to Patreon/Deese Comedy. Also, we've got a new Patreon page with some exclusive bonuses for our patrons. Brand new podcast, doing a 7-day-a-week podcast, a Social Hour morning paper. You can hang out with me every morning as I read my coffee. Yeah, see, I haven't had coffee. I drink my coffee and read Yahoo News, which is an almost news source, and yell about what's going on in the world today. So you can check that out. And also be sure to visit the Some Imperfections page, the newest podcast with life coaches Abby Buckenberger and Sierra Cossey, and myself, where they give you practical life advice and I make dick jokes on the side. It's great fun. That's all for now. You guys know where to go to get all the rest of the information on everything else. For now, we are going to get into it with my guest all the way from L.A., I believe, right? Are you
yes.
in L.A.?
Yeah.
from?
I'm in LA, originally from Toronto, Canada.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so.
But I've been in LA for a few years, so I'm here currently, and I'd like to stay if I could.
You like to? Well, Jen Bertling is our guest. She has made some films. She's made some shows. She's got all kinds of projects going on. We're going to talk about that. And she is apparently from Toronto, Canada, and just an illegal alien hanging out and like, taking all the American jobs. In LA now. So you're from Toronto. What brought you from Toronto to LA? Was it for film?
Yeah, essentially, for film, for the industry. I've been working in Toronto. It was mostly documentary for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. I started PAing, executive assisting, worked my way into production coordinating, production management, associate producing.
Yeah.
So did all of that stuff. And I really wanted to move into more narrative content. And honestly, there's a bit of I'll call it a Canadian glass ceiling.
Sure.
as good as the content is, it's still, I think, considered Canadian content. I mean, Schitt's Creek might be the only exception to that rule.
Is that a Canadian show?
It is a Canadian show.
I did not know that.
The fact that you didn't know it shows how it's actually broken through that Canadian ceiling.
Yeah.
Because it's so renowned. It's so great. Fun fact, I graduated in the same year at Dalhousie University, which is in Halifax, with Sarah Levy, who plays Twyla on the show.
Okay.
So Dan and Eugene Levy attended my graduation. I'd like to think for me, it definitely was. And it was for,
it was a little of both. Oh, maybe yes. A little of her, a little of you, right?
Yeah, it's my tiny claim to fame. I visited LA a few times. I fell in love with the city, with the energy, with the vibe. And I think within a few weeks of me being here, I called an immigration lawyer and said,
I want to stay. So, Toronto has a rather large film industry, doesn't it?
Huge. Yeah, it's enormous. And the funny thing is that, coming to LA to work on films probably means that you're going to end up back in Toronto, but just working.
Sure.
getting paid in US dollars this time instead.
Right. Taxes are different is all. The crazy thing to me, I mean, it's so funny when you think about, maybe this is just me as an ugly American and growing up in LA. Like when you think movies, you think Hollywood and like this glitz and this glamour and there's the beach and the hills and like the whole, LA tropes. When you think making movies, you don't think Toronto, Canada, right? Like that's and take that in the spirit it's intended. It's not that's not a pejorative or disparaging Toronto. It's just a very different vibe than like this, like maybe it's better because it's not like this drug fueled nightlife, like, just crazy.
Totally. I mean, Toronto is, I lived there for about 8 years. It is, I think, one of the best cities in the world. It has such a special place in my heart. Funnily enough, Toronto is masked by production designers and, art directors to look like New York or LA or, some no-name city in the US so often. I feel like we almost get it walking down the street every day. Our subway system is just turned into, a New York subway stop.
Right. So you kind of just become a conglomerate of everything they want to film. You're like, what do we make this look like now?
Yeah.
Like it just lost its identity to being a film place. But what a interesting, like I said, I would never, you never think Toronto, but it really does have a lot going on there. Is there anything else?
And Vancouver as well. And I've barely been to Vancouver, but Toronto, Vancouver, if you're going to be in film in Canada, those are the two places to be.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a lot of people are, even in America, maybe you can speak to this being in the industry now. I know, when I lived in LA and was, I did comedy and radio and some punch up for some people on some scripts and stuff when I was working down there. There was this kind of exodus, though, was like a time, because I moved out of there in 08, and that was like when the economy was really bad, and worse than now even. I know it's hard to imagine. America has been worse in ways at times. Who would have guessed? people were like, you know, the Runaway Productions, where everyone was, you know, packing up and going to Vancouver, or they could pack up and go to Georgia's a big one now, obviously, I'm sure, you know, where people, they can go to these tax haven places or even out of the country, like, you know, go to Vancouver out of the country and film. And it's cheaper than filming in L.A. even anymore, which is just wild. How has that been like? I mean, have you had any experience with that and seen that happen?
I mean, I've definitely seen it happen more from a living in Toronto point of view. You know, we see all of the big productions go there. Netflix just opened, I mean, not just a few years ago, I think now, but they opened their own hub in Toronto.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think Netflix settling in, you know, if Toronto hadn't already been established, for people who didn't realize that it was, you know, a massive production hub, that we have our own, you know, studio city, these, you know, giant sprawling sound stages.
Yeah.
Netflix showing up definitely solidified that for us.
Yeah, that's definitely a good cornerstone as far as moving forward. You know, that's where the future of the industry is, basically online and streaming. So I can imagine Netflix being there is a huge, huge upsell for them.
Yeah.
It is interesting to watch these people kind of find new places and new avenues to do this stuff, and watch LA kind of, it's like I said, it's completely changed, you know, as where, you know, you still have to be there, obviously, because that's where you are and that's where people, you know, feel like they need to be. But also, as things get more remote and you travel, it's like, is it as necessary to be in LA to be in the industry anymore, do you think?
I mean, it's definitely not. I think it just depends what kind of projects you want to work on. You know, if an LA project goes to Toronto or goes to Vancouver to film, they definitely want to be hiring local crew.
Yeah.
It's just easier. It's cheaper. You know, it's for accommodations. They often don't have to find it. But I think it depends at what level. I'm producing now. I'm, you know, aspiring to move up the ranks. So at this level, it would be, you need to start here and then move it there for those reasons.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, like if you're a key grip, if you're gaffer, if you're crew, if you're a daily, then for sure, you know, like a lot of actors, they could be cast here and then they're just filming in Toronto. And I think if you're somebody who's, you know, if you're line producer looking at the budget, then you know you're shooting there, why wouldn't you hire actors who live and work there already instead of having to absorb those travel costs, those accommodation costs?
Yeah, I mean, is there any union discrepancies? You know, I know the unions for actors and unions for like the crew is very stringent, rigid. You know, is them going to film something in another country or another state, does that affect, you know, does the local unions fight that at all, or?
A good question. You know, everything I'm doing right now is so non-union. Yeah. That I'm not really sure. I haven't had to delve into that. I mean, for this, you know, the projects that I'm working on under my production company, Little Monster Pictures, everything is SAG, but it's all SAG, low budget, new media. Mm. So so we're just not quite at that level yet.
Falls under a different categories there. So completely, that must make it a little easier. I do want to talk about, yeah, your production company, the show Disadvantaged, and the, you know, you had a film Off Limits and more. I do want to talk about that stuff, but I'm interested in how you said kind of your origin in Toronto. Are you from Toronto originally, or it sounds like you maybe you said somewhere you only lived there for 8 years?
Yeah, my dad's ex-military, ex-Canadian military.
Okay.
So we moved around a lot when I was a kid. You know, I grew up outside of Toronto in a little place called Guelph, Ontario, until I was about 14, 15. And then we made a big move to Canada's East Coast. So I don't know if you know Prince Edward Island,
yeah.
PEI, we call it. Yeah, it's Canada's smallest province. A lot of Americans don't know what I say when I say that. So I always start with, well, I don't know if you know where this is, but it's where a lot of your potatoes come from.
Is that true?
Yes. Yeah.
Just what kind of potatoes are we talking? Like russet potatoes?
Yukon golds.
Well, I guess that makes sense. Yukon. That makes a lot. Now that tracks. It's not just a clever name.
It's a lot of oysters, lobsters, and potatoes.
Okay.
O'Leary PEI has the famous potato museum, and there's actually the largest, you know, these road stop tourist attraction, the largest blueberry, the largest whatever, this is the largest potato. So it's literally, I could send you a picture, a potato on a stick, giant potato outside on just on a pole.
How big is it?
I don't know.
Like how big of, you know.
I have a photo for scale. It's me at maybe 15 feet high.
Wow.
Jesus.
You know what's funny is like the Pentagon just declassified all these files about how they've like recovered alien crafts and like these videos of alien crafts that they've actually documented. And nobody gives a shit, but I guarantee you 150 people are driving out of their way today to see a giant fucking potato, Jen. So that
It'll be the biggest tourist boom that O'Leary has seen in 100 years.
People will go out of the way to see a giant potato. They're like aliens. Like, oh, whatever, man. I want to see that potato.
Yeah, but this potato.
Yeah.
So we lived on PEI for. I was only there until I went to university when I was around 17, 18. So I went to Dalhousie in Halifax. So PEI to Halifax. Graduated there, lived for a few years, and then wanted to move into TV and film. So I moved to Toronto sort of on a whim and just broke my way into the industry that way. And then,
growing up in that area, I mean, how old were you the first time you visited America?
I think we drove through Detroit a few times as a kid. I visited New York when I was in Toronto because it's right there.
Where is your family going that the directions involve drive through Detroit? what misguided family vacation did your father take you on, Jen? Like the direction, like be sure and put your family in jeopardy for at least some amount of time by driving through Detroit.
Can I request a follow up? Yeah. Section where I can come back and answer these questions. I don't have the answer. I would need to ask my dad why we were driving to Detroit.
Yeah. You'd been a couple times as a youth, but like when you first experienced America, what would you say? How old were you?
I mean, it was probably New York, and I think I was in my early 20s. It's only an hour 40 flight from Toronto, mm-hmm. So it's so close, it's so accessible. And that's the first time I went. I went with my an old boyfriend at the time. I remember just kind of going to, the John Lennon Memorial, Tom's restaurant, like the Seinfeld restaurant. Mm-hmm. Was it Sardi's Diner, where I'm a big Seinfeld fan. So sure. it was my own personal tour of Seinfeld.
Nice. Around the city. Do you have a favorite Seinfeld?
I am going back to New York on my own for a birthday. I think it was my 29th. Just because I wanted to experience the city by myself. And I always thought if I lived in the States, it would be New York. And then I saw LA and completely fell in love.
Turns out you as far away from New York as you could be and still be in the country. side note, do you have a favorite Seinfeld episode?
The pool boy.
Which one is it? I'm trying to remember.
It's the one where the pool boy, his name's Ramon, tries to make friends with Jerry. So he, they kind of run into each other and then he starts showing up and, Jerry's
like,
Ramon's got to go. Like, I only have three friends. And he's like, it's because I'm a pool boy, isn't it? He's like, no, Ramon, that has nothing to do with it. And then he goes, and Ramon starts to like, kind of accost him and harass him at the club.
Yeah.
And then him and Newman almost inadvertently kill him because nobody wants to give him mouth to mouth.
It's funny. My girlfriend and I were talking about Seinfeld last night because we were talking about, she's a little younger than I am, and I was taking her on an adventure of these shows that I grew up with that were like terrible shows and ones that were on way before I was, alive, but also that when I was a kid, there were three channels. I mean, I'm 38. There were three channels, even when I was a kid. Well, we were poor too. There might have been more. I don't know. But we like, I mean, we had shows like, I mean, sometimes the only yeah, it was just like, I remember when Fox wasn't a channel yet. So, okay. Like that happened in like 88, I think. But like, I mean, we had shows because there wasn't anything else on, like The Flying Nun, you know, was that was a show you watched because you were held hostage by like that or an infomercial into the news. But we were talking about sitcoms and how I'm not a big fan of multicam, canned laughter sitcoms. Basically, anything like that is not. But then we both did agree that Seinfeld, that's the one where we can come together and agree. That's a great show.
Absolutely. Yeah. Super timeless. I'm a mega fan, a regular at the old Toronto Seinfeld trivia nights. And there was actually one here in LA that I went to regularly at this bar in Silver Lake called The Friend, which they had going up until, you know, COVID hit. And yeah, now there's a big gaping hole of Seinfeld trivia.
Big gaping hole of like life with COVID in town now. What was it like for you? I mean, I'm always curious from people, their perspective who grew up in a different country, especially something as close to America, but also vastly different in so many ways as Canada is, because like, you know, I mean, there's so many parallels, but also so many differences. Like for you growing up, like what was America like to you? Like, what was your view of America as a place, as the people? I mean, what were your, you know, that's kind of a broad question.
In my mind, yeah. You know, as a Canadian kid, honestly, I think it was built around the the TV shows, you know, the American TV shows we watched. They were all American pretty much. You know, stuff like 90210, Valley High. So it was a lot of like really, you know, really good looking kids who are like so much better looking than me going to, you know, these high schools that, I mean, in Canada, you know, especially a lot of them were based in LA.
Sure.
And so, you know, except for like Gossip Girl and stuff that happens later in the 2000s. But in Canada, we, in our high schools, you know, we have these things called portables. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're basically like portable buildings when the population grows too big for the actual high school.
Uh-huh.
But we have weather and winters. And so you have to literally be like wearing your winter coat to go between classes. And what I've realized here in LA is that a lot of schools don't, like, they're almost even open air. You know, you don't have to shelter from the weather. So it's just, you know, sunny all the time, very attractive people. They're all getting into, you know, these like love, family kind of hijinks.
Like, I don't have any hijinks in Canada. What's going on?
No, we have to cover ourselves from the snow.
Yeah. We're too busy trying to live still. We don't have time for hijinks. Yeah, that I can imagine. It's just got to be an odd, you know, experience to view, you know. I mean, I remember I have a lot of family who lives in Mexico still, and I used to spend a lot of time down there as a kid. And I had this odd perspective because I'd spend so much time in like Mexico City and stuff like that. And I had cousins who'd never really been to America, and I had family and then the people in those, you know, neighborhoods. And their view of America, I'm like, oh no, it's like, at least where I lived, you know. I mean, I grew up in, you know, in the east side of Long Beach, you know, shitty area in the 80s. And I'm like, yeah, like this is, it's not a lot better than this, essentially, is kind of what I'm like. It's kind of looking, I'm like, kind of the same. A lot of taco trucks, a lot of Mexicans, a lot of people get drugs. You know, this is kind of the same thing. But it is weird to see that perspective of how, you know, how different it can be compared to what it really is.
Yeah, I think people who aren't American, who don't spend a lot of time in America, probably think that it is what they see on TV, depending on the show to watch.
What was the biggest shock to you, or like how did your view change when you actually came to America and especially started like living in America? Because there's, you know, there's New York and there's LA and then there's a lot of in between. And, you know, again, as someone who grew up in LA and now lives in the Pacific Northwest, those are very different people. So what was it like? Yeah. I mean, how did you adapt, or what was your kind of biggest shock, you know, to how it was different than what you perceived?
Yeah. And I mean, I've been in LA almost 2 years now. You know, it's the first time I've lived in the States. when I first moved here, I lived in East Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a quick sublet that I could get.
Yeah.
You know, not long term. Just it's difficult for an immigrant, somebody coming into the country with no credit. To go through proper like rental channels. So it's usually a sublet from, in this case, it was, you know, an Indian guy with his family and they were going back to India for like 6 months. So that's how I got hooked up with that place and it all worked out very well, except the area, it was just, I think what I'm trying to say is the poverty and, you know, the homeless population or unhoused neighbors in Toronto, that is definitely a problem. But here it's to a level that I've never, ever seen before.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it makes me very sad and uncomfortable because you don't know how to help or what you can do
right.
in any real way. And it's just not something I'd ever seen before. You know, I've driven down Skid Row. And so I think, you know, coming from Toronto, you think, oh, big city in Canada, you know, I've seen homelessness.
Yeah.
But then you come here and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
It's shocking. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, still not used to it. I've moved now to like West LA or mm-hmm. I mean, West Hollywood. So it's obviously different, the different neighborhoods, but
sure.
Yeah, I won't, every time I drive by that area, it still just kind of reminds me of, you know, sort of being in it every day. And I'd be getting ready in the morning, you know, in my washroom and hearing like people fighting outside of my alley. And depending on where you live in the city, it can feel like it's literally on your doorstep.
Yeah.
And it can feel really uncomfortable as a new person to the city who's just not used to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of commotion, a lot going on. It's funny you say Skid Row, because that's the thing that hit me when I was growing up there. Skid Row has always been around, and it was like two blocks, three blocks, like kind of this strip on an alley kind of was what it was forever. And it was just kind of about that. And then I was gone for a while. You know, I didn't, and then I came back, you know, I hadn't been to LA in about 5 years. I'd probably been to Skid Row and probably eight in that area. And
right.
Oh my, the way it's extrapolated is just really, really sad to see the, you know, I mean, I think it shows a lot of LA's underserving, how they underserve their communities in a lot of ways, unfortunately. But yeah, it has just exploded to a level that's really hard to even quantify.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I mean, that was one thing. And the other, I think, is really just, you know, with on your day to day, Americans aren't much different from Canadians. You
yeah.
know, they're nice people. They're not so nice people. You know, if accents weren't a thing, you might not be able to tell one from the other.
Sure.
Although I get called out as a Canadian all the time because I'll drop an A or I'll drop my O's. But there is a feeling of general tension, I think,
mm-hmm.
In the city that I feel. And it's almost the sense that anywhere, something could just bubble over and something could happen. You know, like
yeah.
it's a feeling of high tension. And I mean, you know, maybe I'm saying that now because of everything that's been happening in terms of COVID, you know, our civil unrest, the Black Lives Matter protests.
Yeah.
And, you know, just this feeling of like unrest in the city has been super palpable for, you know, since, you know, March or before that. But it's, I was never out anywhere in Toronto thinking something could happen today or something could happen here. It's
yeah.
just not reality that we live in. But I think here it's maybe a constant that people get used to.
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, again, as someone who spent most of my life there and lived through like the LA riots in 92 and stuff like that and saw
yeah.
that,
wow.
you know, very, you know, my, that a version of that so many times. I mean, obviously that the riots was the most extreme version in recent history, but a lot of that constantly it's, yeah, it's kind of always at a near fever pitch and kind of ready to boil over given circumstances. I mean, the different cultures, the different religions, the way the police deal with the people is been so horrible for so long. It just creates so much disconnect and discord. It definitely is a place where, yeah, you feel like it's, you know, there's a little more head on a swivel, you know, you pay attention a little bit more, I assume. So,
yeah. But I mean, at the same time, you know, one of the first things that struck me was the positive energy in a city where, I don't know what the actual number is, but let's say 80% work like in the industry that,
yeah.
you know, I've come here to work in. in Toronto, you can have a group of friends and everyone has a different job. You know, I'm in TV, somebody else in fashion, somebody else in retail, somebody else in, you know, in restaurants. But here, if you have a group, same number of people, probably 8 out of 10 are going to work in the same industry as you.
Sure.
Which is great and it's helpful. And it just means we're all kind of connecting and, you know, the hustle that we go through as freelancers and, you know, independent producers. It's just nice to be in a place where everyone is kind of doing the same thing and trying to achieve the same goal.
Yeah. What have you found, you know, after being there a couple of years, what have you found the people are like? I mean, you kind of just touched on it a little bit, but you know, you, with the fact that everyone is in the same industry and it can be a tough industry and sometimes a cutthroat industry, do you run into that at all? Or do you find that most people are pretty generous and pretty, or not necessarily generous, but pretty even as they are in the rest of the country?
I do. I mean, I know people who, you know, love LA like myself. And I know people who have come, visited, lived for a few years, left, and they hate it. They think people are vapid and fake. And that hasn't at all been my experience. And the only thing I can chalk that up to is that, you know, it's sort of the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Like what is, you know, it's, I'm also a firm believer of the energy you put out comes back to you. So
that's
if
very true.
If you keep finding that, what does that say about you? Mm-hmm. You know, been so lucky to, I mean, my very good friend, Paris Herbert Taylor, who I know, you know, and was on your podcast before, we worked together back in Toronto. We knew each other then. We ended up here sort of at the same time. So, and I was lucky enough for her to have been here for a few years before I moved. And, you know, she sort of pulled me into her circle of friends.
That's helpful.
You know, where we sort of had that already in Toronto. So having someone you know is helpful, you know, but even, you know, at my place of work, you know, I do have a 9-to-5. I have my production company on the side, but, you know, everyone has to pay the bills. And even there, I find everyone's, you know, I've just been meeting the most fantastic, amazing people. But I also feel like I've never really had a problem with that. So I think it's just sort of the, you know, what you're looking for and what you have to give.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that I definitely agree with you. It, you know, you do attract what kind of a lot of what you're giving out and putting out. So,
yeah.
The what about being, because you, like you said, you grew up in a pretty small area originally before you moved to Toronto.
Definitely.
One of the things I found, because I, like I said, I grew up in LA, then I moved to the Northwest for a while and kind of in the middle of nowhere and moved around the Northwest and then back to LA for a long time and then back to the Northwest.
Make up your mind there.
I know. I think I have now. Now my next move is going to be out of the country.
Canada?
I'm going south. I'm going to Costa Rica. That's my next destination. But one of the things I found personally, and I want to know your experience with this, was moving after living in the Northwest and moving back to LA. One of the biggest things that I found myself running into was like, there was always people around. Like I could not escape people, you know, like where I lived in, like I lived in Montana for a while and I could drive, just leave my house and drive 20 minutes in any direction and I could be in the middle of nowhere. And like, you know, like you could even just pull into a parking lot and like go to the back of a Walmart parking lot and park and there's not going to be people right next to you, you know, whereas like in California, it seems like in LA, especially, I should say, like I just started realizing like, I'm like, oh, I can't escape people so easily. And that started to get like, I felt like the walls were closing in. Do you ever feel that?
I could see how you would. It hasn't set in. And I think it, for me personally, but I think it might be because, you know, LA has this amazing, you know, it is a massive city. It's a sprawling city with so many people, but it's also surrounded by incredible natural beauty. Mm-hmm. You know, living in West Hollywood, I can drive 3 minutes and go hike Runyon Canyon,
you
know, of course is packed with people. So it doesn't solve that problem. It feels like it gets you out of the, you know, cityscape and sort of gets you back to nature. I mean, I've been to Joshua Tree a few times, and it feels quite secluded depending on where you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there, you might be, you know, but even that's a couple of hours and, you know, an overnight. But I think as of yet, I haven't felt the need to escape the people, and with the nature that we have access to, it sort of feeds that needing to get out of the city.
Yeah.
Gives
you enough, that little methadone kick of nature until you need to mainline a national park one day. I get it. No, yeah, maybe that's just me, because I am an extroverted introvert. So like I'm very extroverted, but I need my time to recharge. So when I am, when I need like me alone away from people and know like to not even hear the wind or a bird
sure. Well, like even when, you know, I'll hike Runyon. And, you know, during COVID, masks on, everything. It's a burst of being out with people. And then you just kind of like, you're just like ready to get back home, you know, like don't, you're too close, like don't touch me.
Yeah.
And then I just like escape back to my, you know, my studio apartment by myself and let my social batteries recharge for a few days.
So your apartment's your escape from everyone. That's what it's.
Yeah. One thing, you know, I mean, I obviously, grew up with roommates, but in Toronto, I'd sort of established this nice little one bedroom that I was very happy in, thought I was putting down roots, ended up uprooting. But my one thing was that I knew I couldn't do the roommate thing again. I'm quite introverted. I think I'm an introverted extrovert. You said you're an extroverted introvert. But anyway, I'm one of those people whose social battery goes down, and when it's out, it's out.
Yeah.
And then I need to go and be by myself, as opposed to extroverts where, you know, other people's company energizes them. It
right.
drains introverts. And I just knew, you know, dealing with the whole cooking dinner thing, like I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Absolutely.
In my place. And I would, you know, it's just one of the things that I'm not willing to compromise on and, you know, from my own happiness.
Yeah, I am 100% with you. I have not had a roommate in probably it's probably been 12 years. And before that, I was only for 8 months. Before that, I hadn't had a roommate in a couple of years either. So like in the last 15 years, I probably had like 8 months of one roommate. And it is a joy that it is worth the extra money you may pay to live.
I know people who, you know, kind of switch back and forth and they just seem okay with it, you know, and I mean, more power to somebody who's so chill that it doesn't matter, but I'm not one of them.
No, my house now, and because in where I live in Washington, houses are much cheaper than they are in California. So, you know, what the basically take like a zero off of things in California is where you get. So, I mean, I've got like a, you know, pretty good size 4-bedroom house, and it's just me and my dog. Like that's, we're the only people who live here. And it's great. And at a certain point I was like, when I was traveling for comedy, I was like on the road 6 to 8 months a year. And my cousin would just come stay here when I was gone, stay with my dog. And at a certain point I'm like, I should just have someone move in and like, you know, I'm gone all the time. And then they, you know, it's supplement part of the, like a third of the, you know, the house cost just to have a room rented out. And then I started thinking about, I'm like, when I am home, I don't want to wake up and drink my coffee and pretend like I want to talk to this person. Like,
totally.
And I'll probably love whoever moved. Only people I love would move in, but I'm like, I still just want to wake up and sit there and drink my coffee and like,
sure.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, I want whether or not I see people to be my choice and mine alone.
Yeah, I am 100% with you. Well, let's talk about your projects. You've got a couple going on that you've been working on and have done. I know you had a short film called Off Limits you did a while back, and a show, Disadvantage. That is Disadvantage still current? Is that something you guys are still doing?
We discussed a few months into COVID, we discussed whether or not we wanted to move forward with a season two and figure out how to shoot it, you know, whether it just be over Zoom remotely, you know, you just kind of write it into the characters, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
As a production team, we decided that we didn't want to send it in a direction that we couldn't come back from. So, I guess we just went through a summer. So now it's 2 summers old that we shot it. But I think it's something that we just want to save until we can actually bring it back in a real way without the COVID restrictions behind it.
Yeah. You know, it would almost be interesting to do episodes where the characters are dealing with it via COVID. Like, they're dealing with how to still play D&D with COVID. Like, how they're doing it via Zoom because they have to. They can't not, you know, I mean, you can play up the angle a little bit, but I, you know, it obviously changes the show completely, but.
Yeah, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's the sense I think of being like something being evergreen or being very much like of the time, you know, disadvantage. It's, you know, we say it's The Office meets D&D, just in terms of the mockumentary style it's filmed. And I know in The Office, Greg Daniels specifically made sure not to include any references, you know, pop culture references or otherwise, so that people couldn't really pinpoint when it was happening. And even the fashion is very, you know, it's just office business casual, but it still holds up now.
You
know, because we want it to be like anytime. And so, yeah, so that's what we're kind of sticking with. And then just new projects kind of take over and make more sense. But I mean, we definitely want to bring the Disadvantage team back, and we 100% want to do a season two when it makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that does make sense, having it be, you know, timeless, as you said, that there's something to that where, you know, people can pop in anytime and still enjoy it and not have to be super up on what was happening during that time or what exactly is going on, you know? What was the inspiration for this? Tell us about the Disadvantage show. We touched on it a second ago. Obviously, it has to do, you know, the Office meets D&D. You can, tell some of those roots of that kind of office vibe, especially the way it's shot, like you said. But why D&D? Did you grow up playing some Dungeons and Dragons, Jen, or how did that come about?
I did not. When I moved, so I met my current producing partner, whose name is Kathy Karitsis. She's Greek, South African. We own Little Monster Pictures together, and we met at UCLA in a producing course, I think now 4 years ago. I went back to Canada. When I came back to LA for good and I moved here, we reconnected. And, you know, she said, my partner and I, his name's James Rafferty, and he is very big in the D&D world. He's a, you know, he's a DM. He plays on Twitch. He's very, very involved in it. They said that they were writing a web series, and I was looking to get into any and all productions I could, just jump back in. So I said I would love to, you know, help out. And that ended up with me producing on it. And then that turned into Kathy and mine's producing partnership, which, you know, so I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. But funnily enough, as a, you know, the casting crew was very small. It's a web, you know, 10 episode web series on YouTube. We shot it over 16 weekend nights in Kathy and James' apartment from 4 p.m. till about 4 a.m. You know, so that was essentially our whole summer.
Right.
And we, as a team building exercise, we played a game of D&D, you know, some random Wednesday night. And it was my first foray into D&D. It was so much fun. I completely understand everyone just thinks it's this nerdy thing. You know, oftentimes it's shown in movies as to identify people as like the dorks or, you know, the misfits. But I find it, I mean, it's obviously so much more popular now, and it's the most accessible, creative, you know, collective world building game. And I'm such a big fan of it. It does take a long time to play. It's like a many, you know, it's like a game of Monopoly. It's like it's your whole afternoon.
Sure.
But when you have somebody so knowledgeable who's DMing you, and they can literally just kind of like help you along and tell you, you know, and James once said, if you're having fun, you're playing the game right. You know, the rule is you have to have fun. And I thought that was the nicest thing I'd ever heard, because people come in worried if they're going to be, you know, I'm not creative enough, I'm not, you know, whatever, I don't feel comfortable speaking up.
Yeah.
And the rule is, you have fun, it's all good.
That's great. So you, what was your character? What would you play as?
Oh my God.
What was your character of choice?
Okay. I forget what, I think I was like an orc who had been,
that's so funny. I was going to, for some reason, I had orc in my head as you would select an orc. That's great.
I have like orc vibes, but I was an orc who had been raised by wolves.
Okay.
And so I had all these, you know, different pat, like I just, you kind of build up based on, you know, there's a whole book and you have to pull from it. But my character was, yeah, a guy who, it was sort of like the, I was definitely taking inspiration from the Jungle Book as like a Mowgli thing. You know,
okay.
A guy who was by wolves in the jungle. So he was, you know, very animalistic, and he had all these sort of, jungle tendencies. But yeah, it was really fun. And I highly recommend D&D to anyone. You know, it's super accessible now. And I think it's kind of everywhere.
Would you play again?
But I also, oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've got drinks, there's pizza, like, you know, it's team world building. There's nothing not to like about it. You know, but what I think we felt like there wasn't a lot of content out there for people in the D&D world. I mean, you can watch people play D&D, but there's not a lot of, this sort of niche where it's, you know, I don't know, millions of people love this game so much.
Yeah.
And they're not seeing themselves represented on screen in a narrative, you know, scripted entertainment fashion.
Yeah. Well, and not to stereotype, but those people who play D&D are online a lot. I feel like that is a lot of people on the internet. So if you can put a show that is directed towards them on the internet, I feel like that's a good marrying up. That's a roller skate and a key that links up right there. That's pretty good. So
yeah.
So as a producer on the show, what does that role look like for you on the show? What does that mean? You know, that means different things for different shows and people, but for you, what did that mean?
Yeah. I mean, producer, you know, like you said, can literally mean anything. It's my quick version of it is that the smaller the budget, the more the producer does, you know,
makes sense.
You just don't have the budget to hire PAs, you know, production coordinators, production managers. So, you know, Kathy and I, we co-produced this together, and we did everything. We were, you know, picking up water, making sure there was, you know, crafty snacks, ordering dinner, we were ADing, I was slating. So really just filling, you know, taking care of everything production wise to make sure that our cast and crew were happy, safe,
yeah,
fed and hydrated, but also in terms of being on crew, we filled in where we needed to. You know, I was brushing out wigs and checking continuity and, you know, script supervising. So yeah, a little bit of everything, which is great. You know, great experience. And yeah, I love those kind of grassroots run and gun, super small. Everyone becomes really tight in the end.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I wish in Netflix in its infancy kind of had a little bit of that, but these smaller boutique kind of interesting projects, and then eventually, like anything, you know, you become big enough, you become the man, which Netflix did. You know, they're like, we're this little thing, and then eventually they're like, we're just cranking out shit because we need content, you know. Then they you become what you hated, you know.
Yeah, you're the McDonald's of whatever,
right? Yeah, that's a great analogy. Exactly. You know, somebody who just wants to be a little burger stand, and next thing you know, they're just,
yep,
served billions and billions. We got a 99-cent menu, and you know, it, I wish there was more of that. And because it's always more interesting and more unique and more original. There's actually really, I mean, obviously there's inspiration from things you've seen, which you sometimes reflect in the product, but it's really like a truly, when you see someone doing something because it's like, hey, somebody paid me to write this script, somebody paid an actor to say these words, and da 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 da. It's people doing it because, you know, it is some income in a lot of ways, but also it's like, it's not an A to B. You're like, we're doing this in hope we can get something out of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was written because it was what, you know, it was, they wrote it because it's what they knew. We pulled together, you know, most of the cast and crew had already been put in place by the time I came on, and most of them came from, you know, NYFA, the New York Film Academy, where Kathy went to school, other friends she had in the industry. So, yeah. You know, it's just kind of calling on the people that, you know, like and trust to build this thing together.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that I really like about the arts. And as I've talked to more people in film, I realize it. And but it's the same, definitely a parallel with comedy. Whereas, like I said, you're front loading your work in hopes down the road it becomes a paycheck. You know, you're creating small films, you're creating independent stuff, and you're doing it a lot of times at your own expense and on your own time, and hoping that it's something someone sees and they like and ask you to make something else, or they, you know, somebody spends a little money on something, and you just, it's absolutely totally. Putting in, you know, it's not like, hey, if you make this, we'll pay you this, you know? So you're really inspired by your art instead of inspired by a paycheck, which I think is so much more organic and pure.
Absolutely. You know, and I mean, the fact is that if I didn't need money, you know, if I had all the money in the world, if nothing costs money, I would still do exactly what I'm doing right now. You know, I might do less of it sometimes, more of it other times, but, you know, like, I think like that's a really good feeling. And I think it's a nice mark of, you know, personal success and personal happiness, that, you know, you're doing the right thing when you would do it for no money. You know, but what we're trying to do with Little Monster Pictures, and you're right, like we are, you know, Kathy and I right now are building out a budget. We're doing a script breakdown for a short that we hope to finance, we hope to film. We budgeted a small, you know, a small fee for ourselves. But at the moment, all the work we're doing on it is free because it's, you know, it's something that we really want to make it happen. It's something that we can do very easily because we've done this a million times. So, you know, that's just, I think it's just what everyone does, you know, but we're just trying to build out this sort of hub of creatives where, you know, we're at the center of it. People can come to us with a script, an idea, a concept. You know, they can say, I'm a sound person, I want to work with somebody, you know, I'm a DP and I'm available. And then we just start kind of putting the puzzle pieces together and building out, you know, fleshing out scripts, you know, helping writers, you know, with drafts or connecting people and making movies under our production company umbrella.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing that you just said, is that kind of networking idea where it's not always like, hey, I need this sound guy, as you mentioned, right now. But, you know, if that sound guy maybe down the road could be linked up with this other person I know, and then we can get them with this person, and then maybe we can hop on board this way. And it's that kind of that ability to get people, the right people together, put the right people in a room together is invaluable. And I think something a lot of people overlook.
For sure. You know, on this, this last short film that we worked on called Off Limits, Kathy produced it. I was COVID compliance because now it's a role that we need. And we thought it would be good for one of us to have done that role so that one, we know what goes into it. Two, we know how to find a good one. And three, we can identify when, you know, it's being done well or not. But what was special about the film, which is essentially about the perils of women when they get into, you know, the risks that women take when they get into a ride share, whether it's Uber, Lyft, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it's a thriller, you know, it's a scripted narrative, fictional thriller, basically about, you know, it's called a rides, they're the ride killer. And basically they're just taking down women. So, it was a really fun little short to film. It was a lot of car scenes, you know, a few exteriors, but we essentially had female, crew in all above the line positions. So, producer, writer, director, sound, DP were all female. You know, and we had our first AC and our gaffer were both great guys to work with as well. But it was a crew that Kathy and I had thought like, okay, we definitely want to bring this team onto our next short. It's a short about, you know, we were saying evergreen content, but this is, it's going to be called Love in the Time of a Deadly Virus, about two older people finding love amidst Corona, you know, where they're not technologically advanced. They're not on Zooms. They're not on dating apps. Like that. And so we really wanted to bring on our our female DP, our female sound. But our wonderful writer director had this, you know, guy she went to school with, and he's a DP, and she really wants to work with him. And so that's great. So it's the idea that, like, you have people that you want to keep bringing with you, and then there's an opportunity where somebody else is like, okay, well, I've worked with this guy though, and he's amazing. Like, he's a genius at it. And so now I'm really excited to work with him and to bring him into the family. And then we, you know, and then down the road, we can be like, okay, so you can work with this guy and you can work with this girl. And yeah, it's just, I think there's an, you want to stick with the same people, but then when you're exposed to, you know, it's a lesson for ourselves as well. When you're exposed to new ones, that it's always great to expand your reach.
Yeah. And not only that, but like when you're working with such an interesting or like diverse contrast of projects, sometimes certain projects will lend themselves to certain people better too. You're like, yes, like person X is very, very talented if we were doing this type of narrative or this type of film, but because it's, you know, more, for instance, action oriented or something like that, like maybe this person would be a better fit for that, you know. And you can have that, and gives you that ability to be flexible and really give your best product every time.
Yeah, I mean, it was so great being on set a few weeks ago. You know, it was the first time I'd really, you know, not been out, but certainly filmed anything live action since, you know, since the pandemic hit. And I felt like it was the first time I'd met new people in a long time.
Yeah.
Because my, you know, circle's been steady. It's been Zooms. It's been, you know, park walks, stuff like that. But now I just met a whole other group of people. We spent the whole weekend together. And, you know, I came out of it with a bunch of new industry connections and, friends.
That's good. At least you're able to get out a little bit now. Has it been, I mean, LA is very, I think LA specifically, I mean, California is fairly locked down, but LA might, where Washington State might be the only thing that's close to as locked down as California. Yeah, Washington State has been very locked down since this all started. So, how have you been surviving during this time? And I don't mean like monetarily, just as a person, you know, dealing with getting by in, you know, you live alone, you said. So like dealing with, I mean, have you been able to see anyone? Have you gone out, done much during the last, I guess, 8 months now we're into this or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, at the beginning, it was weird. We started working from home right away. You know, so is everybody adjusting emotionally, mentally, you know, to being inside a lot, being physically alone a lot? And then it was, you know, and then you sort of start to slowly open up your world again, you know, outdoor walks with friends, you know, obviously you're always wearing a mask, but that just feels like it's a part of, I don't know, it's a part of like an outfit nowadays.
Yeah, it's
so
fairly ubiquitous now.
Yeah. And then just, you know, slowly kind of opening up more and more there. You know, we've been able to bubble, you know, our friend group is, you know, 5-7 people. So we kind of all bubble together. We all see the same people. Everyone has, you know, same partners, households, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And more recently, you know, my day job, my 9-to-5, opened back up. And so we've been going back to the office, which is, you know, they sort of restructured everything, put up the plexi. It's weird because it's still empty, but it's also nice because the routine is coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
However, with, you know, I'm sure you've been hearing about this second surge that's coming, and nothing official has been said by the government, you know, by the governor, by Newsom. So I have a feeling everything's going to head back in the opposite direction, which.
Yeah, I think so too. Unfortunately, I think we're going to be.
Coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing to navigate. I mean, it is very. There's a lot of things about it that are difficult, and I'm sure, especially being in California in a state that, you know, the way they are dealing with it, and same with Washington, you know, the information we get is nebulous, kind of the way they present it, and, you know, how much of it is real, how much of it is false. And you kind of get through this whole, like obviously there's some, you know, it's something we need to deal with, but like, at what level and at what expense, you know?
Yeah. And I have no idea, you know, I'm sort of just along for the ride. Yeah. And I'll, you know, like, it's okay to go out. Fine. You need to stay in. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good way to look at it. Cause you know, you can only, you can only kind of deal with you and your bubble, as you said, you can't really,
You know, life has definitely changed. You know, Saturday nights are now just, you know, watching movies, cooking a lot, that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I rather enjoy it.
Good. Well, at least you're getting some enjoyment out of it. Is there anything you've found during this time that you've like rediscovered that you love doing that you like forgot about? And you're like, oh, turns out I love underwater basket weaving, or I don't know. Like,
underwater basket weaving. That's funny. I was on a work Slack the other day and my friend is trying to put together a charity, like Zoom, people will teach you how to do things.
Yeah.
So she was saying, what do people want to see? And somebody else said underwater basket weaving.
Really?
Yes. And I'm now wondering if that's like a pop culture reference that's out there from like, I don't know, Rick and Morty or something that I'm not aware of, because I've got The Simpsons and Seinfeld locked down.
Okay.
So if there's a reference there, I'll get it.
You know that? So, God, now I feel like I need to stop using it. Cause that is something I've been saying for like 20 years as just a super dumb, obscure, like thing that nobody would ever do. And if other people are saying it now, I gotta jump off the bandwagon. I can't. It's not even I didn't even know it was a bandwagon. It was just something I never heard anyone else say that in my life.
You know, I'm gonna ask my coworker what made him say that, and I'm gonna let you know.
That's funny.
Maybe we can trace it back to.
Yeah,
you're the store.
Maybe I am. God, if that is, that's the saddest thing that's ever gotten traction in the world.
On the coattails of Mario Lopez liking your reference. Yeah, you to saw that. The best that's ever happened to you.
Yeah. That's the biggest fame I'll ever have is Mario Lopez laughing at a joke I made about him, and then somebody using a reference, the dumbest reference I've been using for 20 years.
To actually answer your question, you know, and it's super cliche. I mean, I didn't do any of the baking stuff, but I have been cooking a lot more and experimenting with, you know, recipes, cooking. My mom's a chef, but I did not pick up on her, you know, natural talents in the kitchen. So it's been nice to actually, like, I'm building out a recipe repertoire that I'm really happy with.
Yeah, nice. Where do you work and what are some of your favorites you've got bubbling up in the kitchen?
Okay, so like Parmesan for recipes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So for like Parmesan garlic risotto with shrimp.
Ooh.
I did a sort of braised beef thing in my slow cooker that I really liked back in Easter, actually. I've been working with spaghetti squash a lot. I'm actually doing steak for the first time this weekend because I got a cast iron pan for my birthday.
Nice.
And I've never had a cast iron pan before, but apparently, I mean, you have to cook steak in a cast iron, right?
So. Yeah, it makes a difference. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's at least you're putting your time to good use, you know, finding some new ways to keep yourself fed and happy during all this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, trying to save money, not eat out so much. It's good for the wallet, good for the waistline.
Yeah, there you go. So what else does Little Monsters Productions have coming up that you all are working on? What's in the works? What can we expect to see soon? All circumstances permitting, of course, relatively speaking, soon.
So we have this short coming up that we're filming in January, you know, so it'll probably be out. We'd love to start hitting the, you know, virtual festival circuit, in March or April. It's called Love, in the Time of a Deadly Virus, you know, about two elderly people who find love, you know, during this time, sort of, at the same time, trying to navigate technology the way that people need to, and able to connect with each other. And the other is a short film called Consequence. It's set in South Africa. It's a short that we're doing in the hopes that we can raise a bit more money for the feature. So shooting that February, March, hopefully coming out maybe summer of next year. So I mean, right now, you know, we're looking at independent investor funding, grants, scholarships, that sort of thing. But we're also doing Kickstarters and Seed and Spark. So littlemonsterpictures.com and at littlemonsterpictures on Instagram is where you can find that stuff.
Can people find Off Limits there? Where do we find Off Limits, the film you already did?
Yeah, so Off Limits is there too. You know, we're currently in post-production, probably looking for a release maybe February 2021, so a few months from now.
That's not out yet. That's on its way, though.
Yeah, not out yet in post. But yeah, can't wait to see the fully fleshed out thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, Jen, well, before we let you go for the day, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we have a segment we call the Rundown we do with our first-time guests. Like I said, it's a series of questions. Individually, these questions don't mean much. When you put them together, they just start to paint a little tapestry of who a person is. That's it. They're nothing too stressful. Just put together by the CIA, that's all.
The Department of Homeland Security.
yeah. This may affect your immigration status. So let's.
I just grab a pen and paper, like I'm about to take a test.
Like what? Okay. Yeah. There's no like. There's no A and B questions. Just whatever's in your heart is all it takes.
Oh my God! You're gonna expose me. Okay.
No, it's okay. There's no wrong answers. So because you work in film, I'm going to ask this question first. What is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, just one?
Just one. One movie, all-time favorite.
The Birdcage.
Oh, okay. Good choice. Yeah. Great. Yeah, I actually watched that a while back.
Yeah. I mean, are these one questions? This isn't a lightning round thing.
No, you can expand on it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously everyone has their own list. You know, it almost feels like choosing between, you know, it's a very Sophie's choice.
Yeah.
Question. But Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, and it for a long time was the only movie I had on my laptop. And whenever I would fly, I would always watch it because there was nothing else to watch.
Right.
And so I feel like I've seen it so many times and I think their characters are so, you know, it was so ahead of its time in terms of, you know, portrayals of, you know, the same sex couple, and Hank Azaria is in it and he's awesome. And
he's my favorite part of that.
Yeah. It's cringy and campy at the same time as super heartwarming. And, you know, Nathan Lane and Robin Williams are both absolute forces. So I love that movie.
That's a great choice. I don't know if I feel like that's not one that comes up commonly for best film, but that is a nice choice because it is worthy of that title and unique and genuine. I appreciate that answer. what about, this is one that's, I'm going off script here. Do you have a film that you think is overrated, something that like everyone loves that you just don't see it?
God,
like for me, I don't love Christopher Nolan, I like to very much like some of his stuff. But I find some of it to be very, very how do I say this? It feels like he's just like,
I guess
it's like just self-flagellation, like this I found Inception to be fairly contrived and just very not, you know, like he wants it to be like this big, like, do you see what I'm doing here? Like, see how crazy this is? And like, look at what I did and how weird and like complicated this is. And I'm like, yeah, man, you're just making a weird, complicated movie. It's the,
to which there is no ending or answers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. His DP, the guy he works with all the time, I don't remember his name. They shoot beautiful films, but like, visually tantalizing, but you know, I don't feel like the substance is there, especially for the accolades he gets.
Yeah, I'm going to build off that because I like what you just said. And it's it's something that I just came up with you saying, you know, Christopher Nolan a bit too, like, well, but the first thing that came to mind was Wes Anderson.
Okay.
You know, I mean, obviously his stuff is beautiful,
right?
You know, aesthetically amazing, but he fucking knows it. Like, he knows it every time on purpose. And it's just, when I watch it, I feel like I can't relate. I mean, Bill Murray, like, you know, he's
sure.
Chef's kiss, the most amazing. It's just the aesthetic every single time. It's this twee. It's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see Wes Anderson do something different.
I could see that. His movies definitely start to have a theme and kind of be very much the same. It's funny. I get this. Maybe it's the rebel in me, but like the, I have this same thing with like even Quentin Tarantino at times where I'm like, I love some of his early stuff. And then I feel like he became a caricature of Quentin Tarantino. Like he's like someone trying to do a Quentin Tarantino impersonation. If someone was like, I want you to make the most Quentin Tarantino movie you can make to someone else. And they're like, okay. And they did what they thought Quentin Tarantino would do. Like that's the movies Quentin Tarantino is making now. You know what I'm saying?
That's so mad. It's like an alien coming down, reading the book about how to be Quentin Tarantino and then like doing that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like, man, you got to scale it back. Like if you brought Central Casting this, you know, like we need Quentin Tarantino and he showed up and like to Quentin Tarantino, scale it back. Like, you know, so yeah, that's, I don't know. I like simpler slice of life. Like, you know, I don't necessarily need all the answers, but I just want to like, I and there's a lot of like show me don't tell me in movies and you know I don't know I don't see a ton anymore that blows me away, but there's definitely some every now and then. So well, I was gonna ask you favorite TV show, but you already said you love Seinfeld. Is that your favorite one of all time?
Favorite of all time.
Yeah.
It's a fandom, you know, bordering on obsession. for my birthday, which just passed a few months ago, I lit like from like multiple different people. I got like a Seinfeld t-shirt, a Seinfeld backpack, a Seinfeld trivia book. You know, it was after that where I was like, oh, okay, do I need to develop other, you know, other aspects of my personality? Or can I just like keep down?
Just double down. Just double down on it. It's fine. Yeah, embrace it.
Exactly.
How about this? You mentioned aliens a second ago. Aliens coming down and reading a book about Quentin Tarantino. How about, what are your views on aliens? Do you think aliens are real?
100%. How could they not be? I feel like anybody who doesn't think aliens are real, I feel like it's a mark of narcissism. You know, if you don't realize how small you are
right.
and how insignificant, you know, like me, you, the population, you know, humanity, the earth, this galaxy, the solar system, like it's just tiny. It's nothing. There have to be other, you know, alien in whatever form that is.
Right. Right.
Probably not the alien that we see on, you know, classic aliens, but they're definitely out there.
I would say so too, in some form or fashion. There has to be something, whether it's like us or whether it's like the Greys, like that traditional kind of alien thing you see, or it could be
like the Arrival aliens, you know, like that was a good depiction of like way really different aliens that like they didn't speak English. They weren't, you know, but they were still here with a message. Yeah, I love that, all that alien shit.
Yeah, one of the things that blows my mind is that, you know, people are always like, well, you need water and this and that and blah, 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 the building blocks of life. And I'm like, yeah, but not really. Like, you need that in the atmosphere of Earth, but in a different atmosphere, evolution can take potentially any form. Like, we don't know what evolution looks like with building blocks that we may not even have on Earth, you know, so you could have non-carbon, but you know, gas-based sentient creatures or something. Like,
I think people think that humanity or like life begins and ends with us, like as humans. You know, but I just finished watching and discussing I Am Legend, and that brought us back to like the original book that I Am Legend was based off. You know, which essentially where like the vampire, you know, zombie, whatever they are, actually wipe out everything, and then they take over the Earth. And it's the idea that, like, well, it doesn't mean that he, like, everything still goes on. It's just a different kind of society and humanity than we're used to. Like, just because they're vampires and they eat, you know.
Yeah, like, who's to say, you know, in the, that's not, for them, that's the right society. That's what works. That's what they do. You know, that's their world. They don't know any difference. Yeah. So we just know what we do in ours, and we think that's the right way and only way.
Yeah, like in the original book, the Will Smith character ends up being, you know, like he, the vampire community fears him at the same time that he's fearing them. And then he realizes it and he commits suicide so that they can, like, grow as a society.
Yeah. Interesting. I've never read the book, but that's an interesting, much, much interesting twist at the end. Do you think aliens, do you think aliens have been here to Earth? Do you think we've been visited?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. You think they're still, you think they're still coming, or like they just came and built the pyramids and dipped out?
No, I think, I don't know if I, okay. So I don't think that they're still here. Like, I don't think they're walking among us, but I do think that they're gonna, like dip in and out. You know, like, I think that they came in. I think that probably some of them were caught. It was covered, you know, like, and I haven't read, I don't know, like, what's been uncovered, what's, you know, the statute of whatever confidentiality that, because wasn't it like the JFK stuff just came out? Like, there's a number of years that things are classified.
Yes.
Is what I'm trying to say. I don't know about all that, but I do think that, you know, they've been discovered by some sort of government official. It was covered up for a long time. And yeah, they're going to, like, there's going to be other instances, or when people see things, or I wouldn't discount any of that.
Do you, how do you think people, humans would react if they found out that aliens are, like, we had definitive proof? Like, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the Pentagon recently released papers that disclose that they have in fact found alien life craft. It's like alien crafts that are not of this world, basically, is what it's called. Like, we don't know what they are. They're these crafts. We don't know what they are. They're not of this world. They're something that, like, no one in this, like, they're not made of pieces that we could, that anything on this world could have created. So, and people are just like, oh yeah, who's the Twin Owls on The Masked Singer? You know, they don't care about, they're not, no interest in it. So, but if we had, like, definitive proof, you know, alien comes down on the lawn of the White House and wants to talk to Trump, or we'll say it happens January 22nd and he's talking to Biden. How do you think, you know, and this is all speculative, of course, but, like, what do you think would happen? How do you think people would react to that? Do you think they'd be freaked out, running in the streets? Do you think we would just be like, okay?
I don't know. I mean, you know, a few weeks ago, I might have said pandemonium, you know, just everyone for themselves, like, you know, get out of town, burn the bridges on your way out, kind of thing. But now I think, I don't know, I've been, I think me, you know, you, the rest of America, rest of the world has been given a bit of hope that, you know, collectively we're all on the same team. And, you know, it's a team that wants, you know, a better future, hope, positivity. I also think it really, you know, like them coming down and meeting Trump, who would likely be met with, you know, I don't know, idiocy, you know, matched with violence, and, you know, Biden and Kamala, who, you know, might just be like, hey, what's up, like, what do you guys need, what do you know, how can we help you,
right?
I think they would say, Tom,
it's a little different.
So I'm gonna go with acceptance, and let's figure out how we can all
be copacetic. We'd be okay. All right. All right. Well, speaking of presidents, how about if you could pick any celebrity to be president, who would your celebrity president be?
Tom Hanks.
No, Tom. Why Tom Hanks?
I think he's America's dad. I think America needs a dad right now who will give us, like, you know, just a big collective hug.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to shit on your point, Jen, but America had a dad for a long time, and his name was Bill Cosby, and that didn't work out too well. So don't, you know, maybe we,
I have a good feeling that Tom Hanks isn't going to let us down.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll trust your gut on that one. I just, you know, when you say America's Dad, I'm like, we tried that. It backfired greatly on us.
Who would your pick be for celebrity president?
Celebrity president. Does Elon Musk count as a celebrity?
Yep.
I'd probably say Elon Musk then.
Okay.
I find him to be quite innovative, and I don't know if you've ever heard him be interviewed, but he's very, the way he thinks, I think he is an alien or a robot or some sort of future AI, because that guy is.
I've seen the memes to support that.
People ask him questions and you see he actually stops, and like you can see almost the computing power. He doesn't just start talking. He's like very thoughtful, and he's like considers all his options, and he's like, okay, let me address that, and then, you know, presents his answers. And he just looks at problems and he's like, well, let's find a way to solve that, you know. I mean, he wants to create that Hyperloop in LA, you know, that they've been working on, and he started building it, and they're like, did you get a permit? He's like, well, no, I'm just digging a hole in the in the parking lot of my building. And like, well, right, you're building the Hyperloop. He's like, no, it's just a hole right now, you know. He's like, he, you know, he's like, I'm just digging a hole, man. That's why I can dig a hole. Yeah. And
also, having Grimes as first lady would be pretty dope.
Having Grimes as first lady. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, see? I think it could be good. I just think he has some interesting practical problem-solving skills that would be useful for America, given our current situation. So, yeah.
I would take that and make him Tom Hanks's maybe chief of staff.
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah. He is a little dry for president. Tom Hanks is more gregarious. He'd be able to, let's see. How about now? You can't go out. It's COVID. Everyone's stuck inside. But you know, I'm sure you did enjoy going out before that. Did you have a go-to karaoke song? And if so, what was it?
I did. It was Be My Baby by the Ronettes.
Oh, I love that song. That's a great song. Yeah. That's a great song.
Yeah.
Why that song?
Honestly, I don't. I've always just loved it. It's easy to sing. It's easily recognizable. It's not too long.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good. Yeah. That's something a lot of people don't think about when it comes to karaoke, is you want like 2.5 minutes a song. If you're up, once you get up there, like you're pushing 3 minutes, you start to be like, I'm kind of over singing this song. Everyone's over me singing this song.
Bohemian Rhapsody is a great song. Horrible karaoke song.
Yes. Yeah. That's, you know, I actually have a list of songs that no one should sing karaoke, and that is on that list. That one, Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler.
Oh my God. Even just for the fact that nobody can sing that like Bonnie Tyler.
That's another part of it, is that in like, I Will Always Love You. Like Whitney Houston or Dolly Parton, depending on what rendition you like.
Like anything by Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Anything from like the hell.
Yeah, no, don't do it. Don't do it, guys. You're not going to nail it, and we're all going to hate you the whole time. So, how about as far as music goes? Do you have any guilty pleasure songs? What's a guilty pleasure song of yours, Jen? Like, you're rolling down the streets of West Hollywood, West LA, where you live. Banging this song, you're having a good time, summertime, no COVID, pre-COVID. And you roll up to a stoplight. There's a bus stop there. There's a bunch of people at the bus stop. Those windows got to go up. You're embarrassed. You don't want to hear, and you hear this song. What's a guilty pleasure song of yours?
TLC's Waterfalls. Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
That
I will scream sing that in the car.
You got to go windows up, limo tint, so no one knows that you can just go nuts on it. You ever do that one, karaoke?
I haven't, but I probably would. Oh, you know what? I wouldn't, though, because I can't rap a Left Eye's part.
Oh.
Like, I just wouldn't have anything to do, because, like, to be honest, I still don't know the lyrics. I don't think that I could do it as fast as she, like, as it needs to be.
Yeah.
So it's just, like, a major part in the song that I, like, unless I could do it as a duet with somebody who's comfortable.
Who can rap that? Get that Left yep. Eye in there? All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's a...
I can do the very beginning and the very end.
You just have, like, a refrain in the middle.
And I can't dance, so it would just be me standing awkwardly on a stage with a mic in my hand.
Well, you know, hey, you got to start somewhere on your TLC dreams, because, you know, don't go chasing waterfalls, they say. Let's see. Well, we mentioned I Am Legend earlier, and, you know, vampires, zombies taking over the world. In a doomsday / zombie apocalypse scenario on Earth, how long do you think you'd survive?
I mean, I think I would do pretty good.
Yeah.
I've got some survival skills. My ex-military dad, take us out to the woods, build lean tunes. You know, I did the whole Cub Scout. I was an air cadet. We did winter survival training.
Oh yeah.
You know, I lived on an eco farm when I was a kid, so we had to, like, build a fire for heat, and yeah, I think I'd do well for a while.
Okay. Yeah. So you, like, hunted? Did you hunt and stuff?
No, we didn't hunt. But on our farm, it was like an agritourism thing.
Okay.
Sort of a raise your own food. You know. Carp garden, turkeys, pigs, and I mean, we didn't, you know, we sent the meat we ate off to slaughter, but
yeah, you still had, I mean, at least you're growing something, learn how to do some survival skills. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm definitely not comfortable, you know, killing a thing, but I feel like I could rock a pretty good vegetarian diet.
Yeah, you could. I mean, you can live for a while. You could be fine off that. You could grow a couple veggies and stuff and make it.
For sure.
So,
yeah, and I'm not above eating grubs, you know, for protein.
That's
if needed.
Right. Yeah, it's listen, at that point, go for it, right? Zombie apocalypse scenario, you do what you got to do to survive.
Yeah.
Let's see. How about if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Teleportation.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where would you teleport to first?
Back home. back to see my parents.
Can you go home now with COVID? Are you allowed to travel there?
I think there's a way you can, you know, like, if you, at the moment, I believe you can fly to Canada. You may or may not need to quarantine for 14 days, mm-hmm. you know, there and back, which for me would just, I mean, I think it's kind of crazy and impossible for me to do personally.
Yeah.
Also, I would just because I am here on a work visa, I would be worried about crossing the border or maybe something happening, not, you know, and not allowing me to get back in. It's too much of a, it's too tumultuous right now for me to leave. So I could, but it's not worth it would just make me anxious and stressed out
right.
the whole time.
Again, off script here real quick, but what's COVID look like in Canada for people, like your friends and family? What's the situation up there?
I mean, Toronto has recently been shut back down, you know, because of the second surge. So the local businesses, small businesses are really hurting. Everyone's pretty upset about it. So, yeah, I mean, I think the second wave I think different cities and countries are reacting to it at different times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Toronto's already shut back down.
Yeah, those bigger cities. I mean, and Toronto is fairly multicultural and a lot of people coming in and out of there. So you probably have more, you know.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, where my parents and my sister live, you know, they're just outside of Halifax. So they're in a super, super rural area. I honestly don't think, besides my nephew going to school, they probably have much, you know, there's not a whole lot happening around them anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, glad at least they're doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's see. How do you take your coffee?
Iced mm-hmm. with coconut milk and a bit of sweetener.
Okay. Coconut milk, good choice.
Nice. Yeah, Reese's tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, I think it's a nice cold weather drink.
What you said switch to tea?
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
kind of
like you know like a black tea, okay. you know, English breakfast, mm-hmm. Earl Grey, whatever. Mm-hmm. It has, you know, caffeine without the jittery anxiety inducing amount that coffee has, and it gets a nice fall. It's just a nicer way to wake up.
Do you do that with cream also?
A little bit of milk. The splash of sugar.
Yeah, because that's one thing the British nailed.
My mom's British.
Oh, okay.
So we have big tea culture in our house.
Breakfast, that breakfast tea with a little cream is really a game changer.
Yeah, yeah. It's lovely. I highly recommend anybody. Coffee used to give me a lot of anxiety without changing my, like, how tired I was. But I was just, you know, it's the ritual of having something in the morning, kind of starting off your day. And I switched to tea, and I'm super happy with it.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's a good idea. I can't live without. I drink, like, a pot of coffee. and I just drink it black. I just mainline it. We'll wrap this up here in a second. How about this? This is a good question, Edmund. What advice would you give to a 10-year-old Jen? If you could go back and talk to yourself as a 10-year-old, what advice would you give yourself?
Not to worry so much. You know, try to enjoy more things in the moment. You know, I was a big worrier as a kid, and that everything's going to work out really well for you in the end.
There you go. That's good. You wouldn't give him any winning lottery numbers or be like, bet on the Lakers in 2020.
No, yes, that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
my answer.
Buy Microsoft.
Like, that's the much better answer.
Yeah, then you're like, yes, don't bother trying to improve yourself at all. Just cheat the system and make a lot of money. You can buy a personality.
And that was, yeah.
All right. And as per the tradition with the rundown, once I have concluded, I allow my guest to ask me one question that I may answer honestly or I may not. You won't know the difference.
All right.
No pressure. It can be anything. But again, I might lie. Because there's no fact checking here.
When did you lose your virginity?
I was 14. Yeah. Am I being judged right now? Is that...
No, because I don't know if it's truth or if it's a lie.
That actually is the truth. If... It's a weird story. We won't get into it.
14 is respectable. I have I personally think there is no wrong time or wrong age. I mean, there is too young, but it's
sure.
not 14.
Yeah. There. The people who've listened to this show for a long time have heard the story, and it's. I lived a crazy life, Jen. I'm happy I made it this long. I know that much. So. All right. Well, Jen, please tell everyone where they can find you, websites, social media for Little Monsters Production Company, yourself, if they want people to find you and follow you, etc.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm on Instagram at Jenny Burt. It's Jenny with three N's, JennyBert, and Little Monster Pictures at Little Monster Pictures on Instagram. We're also on Facebook, and our website is littlemonsterpictures.com.
Perfect. All right. And we'll have links to that in the episode description, everything, guys, so you'll be able to find that. But make sure and find or follow her. Check out the upcoming releases. Watch Disadvantage on YouTube now. Keep an eye out, hopefully, for season 2 post-COVID. Off Limits coming sometime around February, we're shooting for, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, and more to come. So like them, follow them, bookmark, and support them so we can get more independently made projects. That's what we need. Less corporate. None of this, like, you've probably seen this. You work in the industry. I was looking at this graph the other day about the amount of movies that were, like, that are made in the last year that aren't sequels, remakes, or like some sort of franchise, you know.
Totally. I hate, yeah. I mean, did you, like, real quick, did you see Sorry to Bother You?
Yes. Was, yeah. With, what's his, not Alfonso something. What's that guy's name? The guy, who's the main guy?
Bootsy something.
Yeah. What's his name? I love that guy. Oh, what's it?
Oh, you're talking about the actor from Atlanta.
Yes.
Lakeith Stanfield.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, but amazing movie, completely original content, and I honestly feel like it did not get the credit it deserved.
No. Did it get a major release, or was it just like a Hulu, got dumped onto Hulu or something?
No,
or?
I saw it in theaters, but I think when it was, like, in theaters against, you know, Angry Birds 2 and, like, you know, just other, I don't know, other whatever, like, that it just didn't, it sort of fell under the radar, and it's something that I tell everyone to watch, and... for me, it's an example of, like, new original content, like, more that needs to be,
yeah,
have wide theatrical releases.
Well, it's one of the, yeah, I mean, I was talking to someone the other day and we were talking, like, about this, and it's like, can you imagine if someone, like, they brought up the movie, like, Beetlejuice, like, can you imagine if someone pitched that to a producer, like, an executive now? They're like, wait, so what, okay, what's this movie about? And that was Tim Burton's second movie, you know. He wasn't like this renowned director that they trusted. He was his second movie after Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and it's like, he's like, yeah, so there's this really likable couple, and they die within the first 5 minutes of the movie, and then, like, they still live at their house, but some other people buy it. Like, it's basically like a bad real estate deal movie. And then, like, you know, and then there's this guy named Beetlejuice that you don't say his name, but they're in purgatory. They'd be like, what the fuck are you talking? No, we're not giving you any money.
Fever dream.
Yeah. Yeah. No one, no producer, no executive, no studio would ever green light that shit. You know,
no.
It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Definitely. Comment content.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, guys, go support them, show them some love, and watch their show that they have out now, Disadvantage, on YouTube, and look for more to come. All right, Jen, anything else before we go?
No, I've had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was great. As new projects come up, let's have you on again sometime, and let's talk some more. So, all right, guys. Well, for the social hour, again, go to Deese Comedy/calendar. Check out all the dates. We do have some live dates coming up in Montana, Idaho, and some other places, as well as some online shows. So keep an eye out for that, as well as some imperfections every other Wednesday at Deese Comedy, and the new show, Social Hour Daily Paper, every day, 7 days a week now, because you needed more of me. All right, guys, thank you very much for joining us for the social hour. I am Deese, and for Jen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep, and we will see you all next week.